Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Scott Jackson. I'm your radio show host this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. And today I'm speaking with Paul R. Dirks about Paul's abundance in research and evidence suggesting that gluten is being the major reason for the decline in the health of our nation. Paul is a 45-year-old man and husband who has Asperger's syndrome and celiac disease. After having been misdiagnosed with about every form of mental illness, bear with me here for a minute. For some reason, my screen popped onto a different... Well, that was kind to me. Anyway, bear with me for a minute here. I've got four different windows open and I'm hearing myself. So hang on just a moment and I'll see if I can get this. Wow.
Don't worry, you sound good.
Yeah. I can't find out what the window is. Well, Paul, I'm hearing myself. So if you can, just to share with the audience your where you're coming from. It's very difficult because I'm hearing reverberations right now. But if you can, share with the audience where you're coming from, like what your background is, your short biography.
Well, having grown up not knowing what everything was about with, you know, having Asperger's and not even being aware of it, I just thought that everybody else thought exactly the same way that I did. I had no idea that there was a difference. And as life progressed, focus and concentration slowly went out the window. It happened right around puberty, as it often does with Asperger's. And where I went from a straight A student to having, like, you know, from B to D to C to finally not even making it out of high school, and going through my life over the course of the next 30 years, it was literally mayhem. And within 10 years of getting the ADHD and OCD, I started on certain days waking up and being violently ill. And I said, I had to start researching things, and everything in my life was tied to this Asperger's. And I like, for instance, when I first started getting sick, it came around the stresses of my first marriage, and that was definitely a strained marriage. And my wife ended up, when I left her, it turns out she was bipolar manic depressive, which, by the way, is a form of what, you know, I believe is progressive mental illness due to malabsorption. And I started to study psychiatry and psychology back then, and I really, not being a one to give up, I studied, and I stayed in it for 7 years. And after that 7 years, I was in, by that time, with all the stresses of not finishing school, being through a marriage and all that stuff, I ended up with a celiac sprue. And doctors were saying, you know, about acid reflux, they were saying IBS, and you know, keep in mind when you start to hear me talk about medical terminology that I am a 10th grade dropout, all right? So as I studied over the years and accumulated this knowledge, I also had some unique background in the fact that my family, my father, for one, is a senior lobbyist for Hoffman Roche Pharmaceuticals, who went there by way of being sales rep, sales manager, and eventually he was training the sales reps to be able to handle teaching doctors cross interactions of drugs. So that was, you know, there was a lot of medical background just living my life as a son, listening to all my life. And when I finally had to put my foot down because the doctors just weren't hitting on it. And one day believe it or not, it was mentioned to me by a pharmacist. Have you ever heard of celiac disease? And that happened. That was mentioned to me about 5 years ago. And as soon as I found it, I looked it up, and it was like, holy mackerel, there's my life's history, from behavioral disorders to stomach dysfunctions to focus and concentration and all the things that are related with celiacs and the issue called malabsorption. Now, having gone through all this, it's left me in a spot where I could start to say, now, if you ask me what ADHD is, well, it's due to the malabsorption process where gluten starts to coat your lining of your small intestine. There's little villi, hair-like follicles in your small intestine that literally, even no matter who you are, get gummed up by gluten proteins. Now, gluten proteins, as they pass through the stomach acids, become viscous as motor oil, and you literally, your food passes through, never touches the villi, and what happens is your brain starts to say, hey, I'm starving for nutrients. And any animal in nature, when they have a starvation of nutrient, there's a natural thing that kicks in where adrenaline and cortisol heighten your senses and increases your focus. And that's essentially your on switch in order to go find food and forage and feed yourself. Now, in nature, when you feed yourself what you eat in nature, not what's told to you is good for you by the FDA. So here you are with this adrenaline and cortisol on switch. Now, the reverse of that, which, matter of fact, in the jejunum, which is the last 8 feet of your small intestine, that, and as a matter of fact, even going narrower down, the last 2 feet of the jejunum, that's where the response, that's where you absorb what's the natural off switch, right? Adrenaline and cortisol being your on switch, your off switch being serotonin, okay? And what's happening is they've actually done autopsies on schizophrenic patients and found that celiacs, the infection itself, can be found specifically in the last 2 feet. Now, when doctors identify celiac sprue, they go put you through what's called a duodenal endoscopic biopsy. Now, this biopsy looks at the top 8 feet. Now, I read this stuff as posted by Dr. Peter Green and Dr. Alessio Fasano, who was just, you know, investigating this stuff as they were young doctors. And they're the ones that did these autopsies. And literally, so if you can have a celiac infection in anywhere of 25 feet of small intestine, and they're only looking at the top 8 feet, well, there's a very large chance that the American Medical Association's idea of gold bond testing could fully miss celiac sprue. So, I mean, I ramble on. Do you have any questions somewhere in here?
Well, we may have, Paul. I have two callers on the line, okay?
Whoa.
One is from, I'm showing from Canada, Canadian province, 604-886-5720. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello, Leo.
Hi, Leo.
Oh, I didn't realize I was on the air. I just dialed in to listen.
But, okay.
Yeah, it's very good information to hear about. And,
right.
Paul, you're explaining it very well. Do you have a question?
Hi, this is Charlie, the Norris partner.
Hi, Charlie.
Charlie
Rock.
Question in terms of, we just dialed in now, so I'm not sure if this is a question that's already been posed, but what advice do you give to people that want to deal with the situation, how to make things better?
Yes, good question.
Well, happy to answer that one. Simple, dietary change. And what people, a lot of times when I introduce the fact that wheat is bad to everybody who's been told wheat is good, they are unaware. If you go into a hospital, they'll literally serve you a tasteless, bland chicken breast without even any butter or salt. And it's kind of discouraging. It's like, you know, what's going to happen? And over the course of the 4 years, and having the benefits of a wife that's from a foreign country, from Brazil, I've learned to literally replace just – there's nothing on this planet. Like I just had my first pizza that I liked. Me and my wife had to develop a dough, and it was the first pizza I've eaten in 3.5, 4 years. So that was like one of the final things, because pizza is literally made with high gluten dough. They actually put gluten
right.
into the gluten.
Well, we've made
so
it.
It's diet.
Paul?
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen, like you're talking about, I went to a health food store, and obviously, I mean, there are some really pricey things out there, but there are also some cheaper things, such as gluten-free dough. Is this what's common in your diet?
Well, it's like I said, instead of having wheat flour, there's about 50 different flours out there. People just are so, oh, wheat flour. I can make anything. I can make apple crisp. I can make cookies. So it's what it's about is it's a lot of fast foods out of your diet. Say goodbye
right.
to McDonald's and say goodbye to pizza. You know, it's depressing. The one thing I cannot duplicate is a Big Mac, but then again, if you really think about it, who wants to?
That's
you
right.
Know?
But
so,
can I jump in?
Sure, go ahead, Leah.
I think, though, part of the problem is that people don't know how to cook. And
yes.
part of the other problem is they don't know the basic science of foods mm-hmm. and combinations and the simplicity of cooking. And growing your own foods as well. And so what happens is the industries take over. I mean, I see that in the autism industry. All of a sudden, everything's gluten-free, but you don't really know whether it is or not. They're telling
right.
you it is, and they're charging a huge amount of money. Now,
I
still cook with flour, but it hasn't affected us. But I have noticed a difference in how we cook and what the bakery produces. When I eat our homemade food, it really doesn't feel like it has a gluten substance in it. But when you go to the bakery and you buy that, you know, because it's all made with the recipes are pre-ingredient, you know, in pre-packaged ingredients. So even the bakery doesn't know what they're doing, right?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? They don't know what's in those pre-packaged recipes. It's like going to the store and buying a cake mix in a box, or potato in a box, or rice in a box, right? You don't know how drenched, like no, that's not the right word, how depleted the content of that food is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But if you're making food from scratch and you're getting, you know, you can go to better quality food stores to get better quality flour, whether it's rye or rice or even wheat. It's really, I think a lot of it is into the understanding how to purchase, cook, and the basic science.
Well, I'd like to touch off on that exact note, because people think I'm all about, you know, wheat is totally evil. Now, if you look at the way bread has been processed over the past 100 years, 100 years ago, you would leave your wheat in a mixture of healthier yeast. Not that there's a lot of issues with yeast too, but the development of the gluten protein and of the yeast has intensified. But 100 years ago, bread was made to sit for 24 hours while the yeast digested the gluten proteins and broke them down to the amino acids that are better for you.
Okay.
Today, you have a three-hour process, you know, called Wonder Bread from you know, 3 hours start to finish. I mean, literally, make your dough and it's out the door in 3 hours.
Wow.
You've lost the entire processing of how gluten proteins were broken down into proper amino acids. And now with this intensified gluten, now it's coming out. That's why all these people are all of a sudden becoming, oh, look, we're all gluten intolerant. No, it's moderation on everything, and it is proper processing. So what Leo hits on right there is very true. So, you know, that's Excellent point, Leo.
Well, I'm just always so shocked at how many people in their 30s and 40s don't know how to cook. I mean, it just behooves me that they don't even know the basic recipes, you know, that we learned as kids from our grandparents or our parents or our aunt or, you know, to me it's shocking. And then children grow up eating fast food because their parents can't cook. You know,
that hits on another issue right there.
Right.
Right on the money. Because, all right, there's a different stress pattern going on here. And stress and corticosteroids are what converts anybody, because everybody's got these genetic modifiers of gluten intolerance. It's the amount of stress in people's lives. And people literally, you know, the mother and father are now both working 40-hour days. Nobody's staying home and being able to cook. And it's a whole bad stew that mixes up, and really just it's just not working out. That's what's been happening for the past 30 or 40 years to everybody's health. No fresh home cooked food. So there's a societal issue going along in there that Leo just tagged on to. You're good at tagging on things, Leo.
Yeah.
There's also, like, I don't know if anyone's seen Jamie Oliver's shows. And what he's touched upon both in the UK and in the United States is food in the schools is 80% fat and, like, I don't know, it's not even food to me. It looks like cardboard, but it's not nutritious. You know, I mean, the show he did, the pilot he did, was quite disgusting, where little children from kindergarten up are eating pizza for breakfast in the school. I couldn't believe it. Like, no, there was no, everything was processed. There was no whole food in their meals, and it was really disgusting.
Right, I'm glad that you mentioned fast food as being, you know, get away from the fast food chain and things like that, because as you're seeing, as I'm seeing here in the United States, you know, which I'm sure is in Canada too, right, Leo, is the people are more into right now the stress of the moment is I've got to get my child off to school, I've got to get to work, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, and there's things that have to happen, and they're so turned on by fast food because it's there and it's available, it's ready, you can just drive to the window and pick it up on your way home and all these things. But, you know, really the seriousness of the matter is that the society as a whole has turned on people to fast food as being, you know, we're even seeing it in the homes, microwaves. You know, we've seen that throughout the years, you know, just throw it in the microwave and be done in 2 minutes, 10 minutes, or whatever. Anything to make the process faster. And, Paul, if you could lighten up, if you could shed a little lighten up, Paul. If you could shed a little bit more light. Go ahead.
Lighten up on what? What do you want me to hit on? What are you saying? Enlighten you to what?
Yeah, there you go. You know, the fast foods, you've seen it as well, the industry. I mean, like right now, I can think in particular, we have Wendy's, we have Burger King, we have McDonald's. We have Taco Bell. They're all, like, in a row, you know, within 30 seconds from each other, you know.
That's exactly the point.
But in my work area, these are, you know, places where they're really busy, you know, and they have to get a quick bite, you know, and things like that.
Guys, what about the fact that looking at it from another perspective, by grocery shopping with your family as a family event, gardening, even if you don't have a garden but you have a balcony and you have pots, and organization, like, you know, planning, where you do family activities together, where you bake together or, you know, and make your meals a week in advance and get the kids involved so they learn how food is put together. But also, food to me is a communal thing. You know, you sit down together and you have a meal. It's a,
right.
Yeah, it's a communal
thing. Doesn't it come out of a box?
Hang on, Charlie has some.
In terms of what you said about fast food, though, it's really a misnomer. I think in the beginning it was fast and convenient, but think about it. How often do you actually go to a fast food place and get your meal in 30 seconds? You're usually in line now. You're usually listening to all the different sounds that go on in the fast food places and the cash register and the buzzers going off saying that the fries are done and people taking orders, you know, 5 or 6, 7 people in front of you, and then you're stressed out waiting for your food. You sit down.
And they get it wrong.
There's nothing enjoyable about it at the end of the day. We've just been convinced that it's fast and easy and convenient. If we really start looking at the experience and you gobble it down in exactly a minute and a half and you're out of there, it's really not what it's started out to be. But we've been programmed to believe it's fast and convenient and fits into our lifestyle.
Right.
Well,
I think
not only that, but the kids are. I mean, all of us are pretty much old enough to remember having a favorite dinner that your mother prepared at home. Now you've got 20-year-old kids who the mother's was. Here's your food, and then now home food has become like fast food, and like Charlie just stated, the amount of time it takes to go ahead and prepare something. If anybody's ever seen my little Mrs. Cook, man, it's like a little blur. She can whip together a healthy dish in under 20 minutes. Yeah. Think of the time it takes to get to the store and back or to McDonald's and back. You know, like Charlie said, the lines. But now all these kids, I mean, not everybody has the benefits like me, Leo, Charlie, you know, that we've experienced this and we understand that the family time has really been lost in just this. It, not only that, the favorite foods that we've all been raised on is lost. Barbecue, that is, I mean, aside from the carcinogens, but that's, you know, what do you think we did evolutionary? We put meat on a grill and we ate it. We hunted the buffalo, you know, I mean, and over the course of the past 1,000 years, that's gone into instant Frisbee discs for, you know, pizza for dinner. I mean, that's the favorite. So.
Right.
And
they've also taken away the joy, you see, of the whole notion of food preparation and having a meal. They've taken that whole ritual away and put it way back in the line of priorities and saying, well, that's really not important. You don't want to spend your time preparing a food, you know, shopping for it, preparing for it, sitting down, setting the table and eating it. You see, because it's not to any big company's advantage to propagate that old belief.
And they've done that with the gluten-free.
Right?
The GF diet is the same.
So they simply are telling people, well, you're too busy. You've got more important things to do than take the time to shop and cook and sit down and have a family meal. But you see, that's not true. Why is it not important? It is important. What are you rushing through it all for? You're going to go rush through it to go and do what exactly? Go back to work, hurry up and go watch TV or what?
Well,
but it does the same thing with the GF diet too. It's a lot of the stuff is prepackaged, ready for you. They don't really explain anything. It's just like, this is supposed to be better, so come and buy it and spend more money.
And it costs $47 for these cookies.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, instead of learning how to cook themselves.
Yeah.
Necessity was my teacher because, like, I was in the fast food rut. I mean, I didn't, you know, and here I was being told that this is good for me. And literally when I got the diagnosis, I'm like, what am I going to eat now? I didn't. It took me years to figure it out, but necessity either I withered away or I learned to cook. And basically that's where I found a passion. You know, to cook and eat. It's not, for me, it's not even a choice anymore. This is how I must live. If I want to live, I must eat fresh food. And that's, if people don't realize. Now, here's one thing we haven't even touched on, and this is what I really want to get across. There is so few things that medical science is not tied to this that I'm at a loss. I looked up multiple sclerosis. I put gluten intolerance. If anybody's willing to do that and take a look and see how many articles in medical universities diabetes. It's being taught that, you know, gluten is the is one of the main reasons. Or, I like I said, all gluten is not bad. Gluten abuse is. And essentially, we're being told to eat at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And
yeah, right.
If you have a family issue, arthritis, go ahead. Put gluten intolerance, arthritis, in Columbia University. If you have another issue, cerebral palsy, put and all these things, I found the common denominators. This is where the passions of my studies took me. And people, I try to tell somebody that has diabetics in the family, and I thank God that Scott was semi-aware of this, because I found out by going to other countries where they say that, you know, doctors are even starting to say, more specifically than starches, stay away from the mysterious autoimmune attack of the pancreas, which impedes the production of insulin. And what it's turning out to be is related to gluten. If you look it up, put diabetes, University of Maryland, put, you know, and this is what people aren't aware of. I have celiac disease. That is probably the worst thing you could develop if you don't know what's going on, because it actually it's able to produce level 10 medical pains, and I survived over 150 of these attacks. What do I know about level 10 medical pain? And I passed kidney stones 4 times. That was a party next to celiac sprue, at least mine. Everybody's individual. Some people are celiac and don't even know it. And what it's costing the American healthcare system, and the good old fashioned non preventative idea of you know, just nobody, they're just, people are not being made aware of the medical sciences that are out there. And I'm like Leo said, a lot of these companies just package the food, and even what they just want you to eat it and go. They don't want you to know what's in it. But one of the largest food manufacturers or people involved in farming have not been our friends. Let's call the company. Has anybody here heard of Monsanto?
Yes.
No.
Isn't that the company?
You've never heard of Monsanto?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Oh, yeah. Leo, you have, right?
Well, wasn't that that documentary we saw?
It wasn't all about that.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Okay,
yes.
So Monsanto's involved in a bunch of things, like, just it's just not a good scenario. It almost plays out like a Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory. Only the thing is, it's becoming conspiracy fact. It's 4 years ago, and I mentioned this to people, they had no idea. And thank God that people, I mean, they're getting diagnosed, but right now our health care is estimated at 3 million. This is a government website saying 3 million undiagnosed celiacs, or at least 3 million in the country, and 97% are undiagnosed. I went through over $100,000 of health care for Yale to tell me it was impossible. We've done all the gold bond testings. I said, Doc, would you like me to tell you how you did these tests wrong? They're not even trained to do them properly, okay? Not even trained to look at the facts. And literally, they had another $50,000 of testing lined up for me. And one of the main things is, I have a guy I know here in this town that he had a 3-year-old daughter who was cut open 30 times and was told by the same doctor that told me, I cannot be a celiac, told his daughter cannot be a celiac. Here's one of my important things I want to touch base on. $3 million, $100,000, $174 genetic test made all that money look silly. Okay, and as a matter of fact, guess what? This little girl turned out, who was anesthetized 30 times, who was cut open 30 times, who had seizures 30 times. Do you have any idea how much that costs? The CDC doesn't even mention. All they want to do is say, hey, here's your H1N1 vaccine. I mean, and there's all kinds of mysteries around vaccines that I don't even want to touch base on right now. But it's just not looking good for our governmental agencies who are in charge of our health. They're more in charge of taking care of the companies that get them into office than they
exactly.
are taking care of the public.
Paul, before we go into another question from another caller here that may have a question, I just wanted to you had mentioned about this young girl and getting the test. But before we go into the actual test, let's just take a second here and just to reflect on, you had also mentioned that, could you tell us something about your dog that was really interesting to me in a conversation with you?
Well, here's another thing, and not only do I more than know that this is tied with autism, I've done studies at UCLA Center, but I know autism is tied to epilepsy, okay, which I got this whole new science, and it's really like, you know, I'm not being accepted by the general philosophy of things, but here it is. My dog had epilepsy. She was not an occasional epilepsy. Me and my wife worked and slept 16 hours a day, and we caught two of them a month for almost 6 months, and they weren't petite mal, they were grand mal. So having read through things, and I've never had seizures, that people thought I was having seizures because, like you, I used to think in pictures. They were so vivid. So anyway, they thought that my dog was having grand mal seizures. She's a French poodle. And it's funny because she acts almost like a poodle version of myself, or a dog version. She's very hyperactive, very, very energetic, and very ball-focused. So I looked it up on the Internet. I put canine epilepsy, and I put, you know, Tufts University. I'd try to find anything. Nothing. Nothing was showing up. Then I put canine epilepsy, Tufts University, and I included the word in the search, gluten intolerance. Lo and behold, there was 15,000 articles. And at the time, there wasn't gluten-free food, so me and my wife literally started cooking for this poodle. Okay? Within 2 weeks, she had one more petite mal, not grand mal. She was aware that she was something was wrong, you know, before she was out like a light. One petite mal seizure, and bada bing, she hasn't had a seizure in 2 years until she started getting back into regular dog food, which I'm at my parents, and they have dogs that eat the regular dog food. She got in there, and within a week of eating it, she had another seizure. Stopped eating that stuff. We made sure that the separation was there, and it was gone.
Very interesting. And about the food pyramid change, can you mention a little bit about that?
Well, that coincided, you know, with Asperger's in recollections and large bases of knowledge to go off of. That was one of the things that coincided with me going from a straight-A student. I remember literally sitting in class when they inverted the food chart. And all of a sudden I was having, instead of scrambled eggs or eggs and bacon and, you know, all this kind of, quote, bad food for you, I switched to cream of wheat. I remember literally sitting in class and getting angry at the history teacher for teaching me something that I've already heard before and literally going into an almost a blind rage. And I even had to say to myself, I was aware that something's not right here. Even in the sixth grade, I remember sitting thinking, I don't understand why I'm this angry, you know, and the teacher's not doing anything to me. It's not him doing it. Why do I have? And I just that was the start of the loss of my focus and concentration, where I fell right on through what I was told that I was bipolar. And if you read the definitions of full blown celiac sprue, and you read the physical definitions of schizophrenia, well, according to that, that's where I was. And when I removed it from my diet again at 42, and I finally got my genetic testing back and all that, the strangest thing in my life happened. It went like this. I got a cute wife. I've always had destroyed relationships by intense, magnificently ignorant male jealousy. I am as guilty of that as probably any, driving home with anxiety and panics, ready to tear out people's eyes, just uncontrollable. All of a sudden, after 2 weeks of me going gluten-free, the rages that literally, I literally used to go to the gym, I took a job to make sure I controlled my energy level because the rage was so intense. All of a sudden, my wife was saying to me, honey, I'm going shopping. I'm like, wow. I was waiting for something to happen. Nothing's happening. I go, hey, honey, have a nice day. By the way, you look great. And I literally had to turn around and do like 4 360s and say, who the heck said that? This is not me. What is going on?
Now,
and all of a sudden,
Now, Paul, in 1976 is what was said, they inverted the food chart, right, the FDA?
Yep.
They did that unaware?
On the what?
They did
what
that. When they inverted that food chart back in 1976, was that making people aware of that they inverted it?
Well, if anybody's my age or older, they remember it clearly that meat was at the top and wheat was at the bottom, and all of a sudden, and I really do think that this was an intentional thing, because I found science is going all the way back to places that again, Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory would fall into, but I found things mentioning celiac sprue back in ancient Greece.
Right.
Okay. And
right.
I found, so this is not like a new science, and you're not going to tell me medical science had no idea about this, because
the
more we go through time, the more people see, and if you look at the number that the government states is 3 million, and all of a sudden, I had a neighbor across the street who was diagnosed with celiac, and it's not just a schmuck. The guy was a town's a chairman and very successful. And then another, and to look at him, and this is where Leo comes in, because people aren't aware that autism is not all about dysfunction. This guy was so, I don't know, so driven and so intense and you know, such a character that it fell right into celiacs and autism. And people just don't understand what celiacs is, and they don't understand what the autistic spectrum is. And if it wasn't for survival instinct, I wouldn't be standing here to talk to you. But I just had to do the studies. I didn't have a choice. If I wanted to live tomorrow and not have a level 10 medical pain attack, which is a mysterious death for many people, I'm lucky to have survived it. If I didn't study, I would not be here today knowing this stuff and trying to warn people about it.
Right. Paul, I'm going to put on another caller here, and hopefully it's a question. If not, we'll sit back and we'll talk some more. Caller from area code 303-264-4862, you're on the air. Hello? Caller from area code 303, you're on the air.
Oh,
don't worry.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah.
I had
no idea I was going to be on the air. I don't have a
question. That's okay.
I have 1,000 thoughts. I'm up all night, literally, just because I had some meat that had some sauce in it. I think that sauce had corn syrup or something like that. And I've been on and off the toilet for the week. I've just been diagnosed with autism this year, with a form of it. And found out the commonality, whatever it is, 20% or whatever, just like there's the autism from, or there's the co-occurring issue with seizure disorders and a whole variety of other things, there's the commonality of autism with indigestion or digestion distress or chronic digestion problems or whatever, and I'm just trying to live. When it comes to my digestion, I just retained a doctor, a new primary care doctor, and it's for the purpose of getting help with my digestion. Saw him 2 months ago, gave me a celiac disease test. I'm not even sure what the results of that were, but I know I've been in the bathroom way too much, and I'm eating good food. I'm eating good food. I'm in too much pain too often, being too careful, and so I just called in to listen, see what you guys had to say.
Well, let me give you, can I give him a piece of advice, Scott?
Please, that's why I'm here.
Okay, I've been through what you're talking about, literally. And the mornings, every morning before I went to work, I'd literally throw up and go to work and try to pass. That was a difficulty that's related to celiacs. Now, the American Medical Association literally is misdiagnosing 97%. That's the statistic, okay? I recommend, this is what I'm trying to say here. This is very important, because with all that money wasted and all these people suffering these issues, why is not the purest science on the planet being used as a preventative measure called genetic testing? Now, I've been advocating a certain lab called Intero because there's a man there by the name of Dr. Kenneth Fine who is diagnosing people left and right with gluten or allergies to corn syrup, and to identify through genetics your particular food allergens and whether they be gluten, whether they be soy, whether they be there's you know, shellfish. People are eating this stuff and it's all said to be good. This genetic test for $174, it's 99.9% accurate and submittable in a court of law, made Yale look silly. Okay?
Okay. Tell me the name of that test and the name of the doctor again, please.
Well, Dr. Kenneth Fine is associated with a lab called Intero. Enter, like, just like entering the door with an O at the end. Intero.
Gotcha.
Okay? And if you go www.interolab.com, there's actually a contact. You can actually speak to a person there. Now, this lab, now Dr. Kenneth Fine is the first, one of the first doctors I found whose philosophies lie exactly where I mean, I didn't know I was going to be stumbling on this stuff, but that's not who identify whatever food allergies. I got identified through a lab in California called Prometheus Labs, which was the American Medical Association's choice at the time. Now, Intero Labs, like I said, identifies any of your food allergens. Okay? And not only, here's one of the things that the doctors have long since forgotten about, which was a standard practice, and which is a practice in the art of war. When they collect intel, they literally dig up the enemy's poo, okay? And you can tell a lot about a person's health through their feces, okay? Now, the fecal testing that used to be a standard has disappeared. So all these developments, specifically over the course of your digestive tract, and specific, I always say autism spectrum disorder is a spectrum of created by the chemicals that you've been exposed to, the emotional and physical stresses that you've been exposed to, the food allergens you've been exposed to. That will literally form. Can you imagine a mother who's getting pregnant? That's an immunal stress. Now, if a mother's going through malabsorption due to the fact they're a celiac or soy or whatever their food allergen is, and their small intestine's literally going, all right, here's your allergen entering through your bloodstream through your small intestine. Your small intestine's literally getting attacked by, that's autoimmune, by itself. Your antibodies are literally attacking the source, the small intestine. Here you are with impeded absorption. Now, what's the most important thing in the first, in the development of a baby is the absorption of proper nutrients for brain development. But what do I know anyways? So, Intero Labs, okay? If you go there, just go there and read the website. Read the number of dysfunctions that people have found that a gluten-free diet literally, I mean, it's not a miracle cure, but the earlier you catch it and the less the damages that you have. Let me tell you something. I'm as regular as rain. I mean, I'm done in the morning. I go to work, and I'm done for the day, and I look forward to the next morning because I used to fear the next morning. I used to fear going to sleep because I woke up, you know, at least once a month having these level 10 celiac sprue attacks, and every single day I woke up and threw up and went to work. Now I'm regular as rain, and I'm not going to thank the American Medical Association for that and I'm not going to hate them either because the fact of the matter is they're not trained properly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, before this call is up, before your session today is up, I want to thank Leo. Leo, you're the one that invited me on Facebook, and I'd also like to be able to go grab those labs that the doctor did because I'm going to be following up with him this Wednesday. See if you can guide me a bit. Maybe later you can come back to me and I'll have a specific question on that.
Sure, great. Leo?
Yeah, sorry, what's your name?
My name is Brian Bernard.
Okay, Brian. Yeah, you're welcome. I was posting this everywhere last night. Glad that we were able to help.
Before you run, Brian, no doctor is needed. They have their own doctor. It's not a blood test. It's a DNA test. All you do is send for a cotton swab, send it back in, and you wait 2 weeks, and you're done. That's the end of the story. Genetic testing, that's it. And the American Medical Association could save so many. Fact of the matter is, it would probably cripple the pharmaceutical industry if we found out that diet was really just devastating our health.
Right, right. I want to find out my food allergens and then avoid them. But I thought for sure this primary care doctor needs to send me over to a GI specialist. And I don't know, maybe the GI specialist can actually be boned up with some naturopathic or something, get me with some, what are those called, phytonutrients and glyconutrients, and I don't know, actually do something other than some damn Tagamet or some piece of crap that's just going to make me worse, but it'll maybe put me at bay for a few months or a few years. Just, you know,
yeah.
I don't want to go that road.
Exactly. Give you another side effect, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in, Brian. We appreciate your phone call.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dead
hey,
air.
Paul and Leo, I see you guys on. If you wish not to, just give me a shout, okay? I did want to go back to Paul. And speaking about specific areas, it's probably okay. Bear with me. you mentioned the first 8 feet of the colon, and then you haven't really mentioned the last part, which I know you know a lot about. So can you start talking a little bit about the other way?
About the colon, or about the small intestine?
Well, you know how we were talking before, and you mentioned that they tested the first 6 feet, but they weren't able to get to the last 2 feet, and then they go when they do an endoscopy. When they go through the other way, that they seem to be missing some too. So, can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. In proper hands of a doctor who is aware of the medical sciences, a sigmoidoscopy can also identify the infection. That's not only is that last couple of feet responsible for the absorption of serotonin, but believe it or not, you're still absorbing food through your, you know, nutrient through the top part of your colon. And, I mean, just it's unbelievable that like I said, one of our main resources and doctors not looking at our fecal material is just like, it's like ignoring. It's like being, it's like ignoring things that they should. Your body can't, you know, live without a heart. Your body can't live without a brain. None of it can live if it's not fed. And the doctor is doing a duodenal endoscopic biopsy. That's one issue. There's another issue around their identification of certain diseases, because they look for antibodies called IgG, IgA, IgE, and the pathologists aren't literally. They just, you know, half the pathologists. One of the things that was stated in the study is that the pathologists aren't even aware enough or trained well enough. And you know, you think that if I'm hitting on all this modern science, why aren't the doctors being trained any of it? They're trained to work on your elbow. They're trained to work on your knee. They're trained to work on your gastro. They're trained to work on your heart. But they're not trained to work on your body as a whole. So, you know, to leave anything out is just negligent upon insurance regulation, negligent upon the industries. It's a much simpler thing than it's being made out to, but I don't know if it's intentional or not. I just don't get it. A pharmaceutical company, in the case of my dog, we'll go back to my dog, if they can't sell you Dilantin, what are they going to do? As a matter of fact, this genetic test was instituted in Italy by Dr. Alessio Fisano, and this is the only one of its type. It was indiscriminate, meaning that every race, every color, everybody was tested. And their idea was to identify those with the genetic modifiers of gluten intolerance, because they know exactly how I described it before with the malabsorption of serotonin being responsible. Their idea was to genetically identify those, remove the allergen from their diet, and save potential billions of dollars of health care. What's going to happen to the same industry that advises our FDA? What's going to happen if they can't sell your child Adderall? What's going to happen if they can't sell your child Xanax? What you know, that industry is going to go down the tubes faster than lickety-split if dietary issues are addressed. And that's right here lays, I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds to me like a 10th grade dropout has figured out a new healthcare system, but I'm running up against a multi-billion trillion dollar industry, and I'm making waves. There was once a doctor that said foolishly that when he went down and performed an autopsy and then went up and gave birth to a newborn, he was passing this disease back and forth and pathogens back and forth to his patients from the dead people. And he foolishly said to wash your hands in between. That doctor literally was chastised, almost driven out of profession, for saying such an absurd thing. Okay, well, here I am. I'm not a doctor, so they literally don't even consider me a threat. So, yeah, wash your hands and eat right. You know, it's a simple equation. 2 + 2 = 4, and that's what a lot of people don't know. They just forgot. They're so darn busy that they just don't even take the time to stop and figure it out.
Now, Paul? Yes. Paul, I'm sorry to interrupt. I know you mentioned...
I could go all day.
Yeah, I know. Milk is no longer digestible. Can you explain that? Lactose intolerance.
That's a redundant question because you know I can. Okay, now, lactose intolerance...
Yes,
what's happened to our milk? Okay, literally, if you look at this whole picture, nutrients are being taken from our diet. Now, pasteurization of milk. It is designed to boil out rapidly. You bring milk up to 212 and literally cool it as fast as you can, and that makes the milk look more presentable. It doesn't separate, and you don't have to shake it anymore. Oh, my God, you have to shake some milk. It's, you know, stressful. So when they do boil out the baddies, the E. coli's and the salmon, you know, all that stuff, there's something in milk called probiotics, okay? Probiotics are what's responsible. They actually live in a symbiotic relationship in your small intestine that help you digest lactose. Now, these probiotics are brought to the boiling point, and they're a living organism. They die just as well as the baddies, okay? And not only that, in pasteurization process, the effect on lactose sugars, or not to mention here, I'll go into fresh juice sugars. When you boil them, they literally, if you look at the molecules under a microscope, they almost like receptors for your villi to catch. They have ends. Now, when you boil it, these ends fold over and now are no longer being caught, and they no longer, in milk specifically, they don't have a probiotic to help you break down the lactose. And, oh, lo and behold, after, you know, thousands and thousands of years of drinking milk, all of a sudden we're all becoming lactose intolerant in the same past 30 years. So, did I do that?
Right.
Did I cover it?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And also a dentist that you're familiar with, your dentist, just speak with a, if you would... a little bit about that, and he's still celiac to this day since 1940, I believe you mentioned.
Oh no, it was my dentist's hygienist. She was identified in 1948,
uh-huh.
Right after where these sciences came from. And I'm not going to mention anything because it makes you look like you just went over the edge. But she was identified. She was identified in 1948 by a doctor that came back from Asia as celiac, and she's not, you know, she's been identified as one, but without the knowledge of knowing that, you know, if you are celiac, it's not, you could be eating the stuff all your life, but it's a matter of not who but when you're going to come down with this dysfunction. So she's fully unaware. I mean, she didn't do these studies, but she was
right.
identified as a celiac in 1948. And she's
right.
eating wheat to this day because the FDA says it's good for you. But taking off of what Brian just said, he's got to stay away from high fructose corn sweetener. High fructose corn sweetener is used on a farm to fatten a cow. Now, here's another nice name I like to bring up because this is Dr. David Kessler. If people
right.
think that my studies aren't real, Dr. David Kessler is the ex-commissioner of the FDA who went on record on the air on the early show, and he specifically stated that obesity and hyperactivity in children is directly related to malabsorption of gluten combined with high fructose corn sweeteners. When he removes these from the people who have weight issues, from their diet, and I experienced this. I literally went through withdrawals. I mean, I've been on back, you know, I'm a drywaller. I've got damage to my back. I walked away from opiates. I walked away from anything, some of the worst, most addictive things on the planet. I've quit. I'm back to smoking cigarettes again. You know, here I am preaching health smoking cigarettes. But the addiction process I went through was almost like an LSD trip for me. It's all individual. But Dr. David Kessler went on the air saying that these children are going through addictive withdrawals that is far greater than nicotine and opiates. And the improvement. What's that?
Well,
yep.
Well, I know you also mentioned Dr. Peter Green, some other names here. Just go ahead go ahead and catch me if you would like to expound upon those, okay? You just mentioned Dr. David Kessler.
Yep.
Yeah, also, I believe you mentioned, let me see if I can pronounce the name right, Alessio Fasano.
He's the one I was talking about, and you can just guess by his name, he's the one that did the genetic test in Italy. And to be honest with you, I found opposition through those forces. And I've spoken to Dr. Fasano and Dr. Green face-to-face. I'm like you, Scott. When I get a bug up my rear celiac end, I have to know. And I spoke to Dr.
Right.
Fasano, and him and Dr. Peter Green are literally the ones that are advising the duodenal endoscopic biopsy and all that. Now, Dr. Fasano, when I spoke to him, he mentioned the company that I found in my little, just as well as I found Monsanto as a big evil industrial baddie, and pharmaceuticals, a big industrial evil baddie. There's a company called, it's not a company, it's an amalgam of all the scientists and all the pharmaceutical companies called Codex. And he
could you spell that out for me, please?
Codex.
Oh, okay. I had Codex. That might be the reason why I couldn't find anything.
Couldn't find it. Yeah, it's on YouTube, and Dr. Lima Rabo and a whole bunch of people are all aware of these facts. And you know, I just
right. okay.
over the course of my studies, I stumbled. Now, Codex is responsible for advising the world councils as to what we're like the FDA as what we're supposed to be eating. Okay.
Exactly.
And Codex is also, if you imagine this, the pharmaceutical industry does not have your best looks. You know, they're about profit, and they're doing a pretty darn good job. Now, like Brazil, the food down there, and we're talking about fresh food again, and all of a sudden, where we would go down to Brazil and see these people, everybody is nice, slender, very happy and healthy looking. And now McDonald's and pizza has moved into there. I spoke to a man in France, a Frenchman. I used to drive a limo. I spoke to him, and he says, oh, McDonald's and fast food came here, and we were always healthy. And all of a sudden, everybody's going the other way, getting where everybody was healthy looking and slim, and now all of a sudden the entire cultures are going unhealthy.
Right.
So,
I'm sorry, before the show is off and off from streaming live, we'll still be on the air, but we won't be streaming live. So we'll catch in a broadcast and be recorded. Any last words, like in the next 20 seconds, in ref-
the main thing that can change our health care is identify your food allergens. I mean, you could talk about food allergens all day. Just get to know what your genetic background is. Take a simple $174 test and save your life from a life of pharmaceutical needs and misdiagnosis. Just change your diet. Eat fresh and eat what's evolutionary correct. Was that 20 seconds yet? I can fill it up more if I need to.
No, the 20 seconds left when about the time you said it changed your life, and so it ended there. So that was good. So streaming had just ended, but let me just reassure you that people can still call in, that there are still callers on the air, not on the air, but waiting. In the case they have any more questions or concerns, chat room's still open. We'll continue on, you know, as long as we need to discuss the important points. Now, Paul, I noticed you had mentioned previously in a previous talk you were speaking a little bit about this crystal-like in between the in between the serotonin receptors and the transmitters. Can you just explain that a little bit?
Sure. Under my silly science, I've identified a whole group of what I call brainstorming activities. Brainstorming would be epilepsy, which they have, here we go, calcification, okay? Brainstorming would be Tourette's. Brainstorming would be migraine headache. There's a whole group that falls under brainstorm. Now, I found this at UCLA Center of Autistic Research, and they were talking about the genetics variants that they've identified in association with autism and what they mean. Okay, they're the CDH9, CDH10 genetic variant. Don't mean to bore anybody with stupid numbers, but they literally, here you are, malabsorbing. And if you notice, if you watch on the news, everybody's being, you know, getting their blood test back, and whoa, lo and behold, everybody's seeming to be vitamin D deficient. Now,
right.
Vitamin D is essential for the processing of calcium in your body. And as a matter of fact, you need sunshine in order to process the vitamin D. That's how this little chain works. Now, having removed good milk from our diet, having removed our ability of our small intestines to absorb properly, what's happening is these calcifications can end up in your kidneys, and lo and behold, kidney stones, but they can also end up in your brain. And what they're finding is these little these crystals are what they think are responsible for the hyperactive savant issues surrounding autism, as well as epilepsies or, you know, Alzheimer's and a whole slew of other things. This hyperactive thought process is ruling all our kids' lives. As a matter of fact, my mind went so hyperactive when I got into this when I was a kid, when I had the first issues, that I really spun out and got into a dumb state. Like I was literally like a punchy jock athlete. That's literally how I put it. And until I figured out how to slow it down some, then I says, wow, the reason why I can't think straight is because I'm thinking 500 things at the same time. And that's how that all ties. That's a brainstorm activity surrounding the autistic. UCLA Center of Autistic Research, CDH9, CDH10 genetic variant. If you Google that, there's a convoluted slew. There's thousands of articles now on it. I can't even keep up all the different articles. But that particular fact was one of the earlier articles that I found under that, and it's getting buried. So it's just, there's another piece of science. What else would you like to touch on?
Well, you mentioned some arrhythmia, even sinus node in the heart, neurological and poor neuropathy before. I think that's an area that we really haven't touched yet upon. I mean, we talked about diabetes a little bit, and could you just maybe explain that a little bit about the
Sure.
neuropathy? Sure.
Sure. I'll plug my boss, Rod Taylor. Hi, over there at Woodbury Ski Area. He's a man I had worked for in the past. And one day I said to him, he told me, because I was aware of arrhythmia and what that was, because my father has it. Okay.
Right.
And that's neurological dysfunction. Now, my father had his genetic test, and it came back positive, not for the celiac, HLA-DQ2, just two genes. I won't get into the numbers. He came back with another one, and it came from Intero Lab, and it said, over long-term exposure of gluten intolerance, neurological damages are you know, very possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to neurological sites or neuropathy sites, apparently... So I said to here's my boss, I said to him last year, I said, you have arrhythmia. Do you have pins and needles in your feet? Do you have a loss in sensation in your fingertips or your toes? No, not at all. Now, this year, my boss, as I overheard, you know, on the phone, he said to the nurse, I got pins and needles in my feet. I says, mention to the nurse peripheral neuropathy. And he did so, and the nurse is like, that's not our field of expertise. We're cardiac people, and, you know, that's where I keep saying that doctors are not communicating all pieces of the body together. And I knew that he was going to come down with this neuropathy due to the fact that he had arrhythmia. So, because that's what exactly happened to my father, and it's sure enough, you know, genetic science rules overall. That's all I can say. It could put a man away in a court of law. It can free a man that's in jail. It can tell you whether you're Maurice Povich's paternal parent or not. You know, I mean, that's how accurate it is, and it's literally and intentionally being ignored.
Right. Thank you so much for this, Paul. I know people. You wouldn't have them to know this, but people out there don't know this. Paul, the seriousness in your voice from your past life and from seeing this in your friends around the world as well, I understand from you this afternoon that you've been working like 40 hours now, and you're at another cup of coffee just to stay awake because how important this is for you and for everybody.
I didn't drink coffee.
So. I just appreciate how much passion is here. Well, I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
I said I didn't drink any coffee at all. This is all passion.
Oh, goodness.
No coffee at all.
Well,
I'm
Paul,
dead
thank
exhausted,
you.
But yep. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you so much, though, for doing this. You don't know how. Well, let me share a little bit with you that I haven't shared with you before, I don't believe, and that is the reason why I became interested in this. My daughter is also being tested right now for celiac. For various reasons, number one, due to the cost and things that we won't go down that road again. Let me begin by saying that I do have Asperger's. I have come to terms with that over the past couple of years. In fact, anxiety, depression, things like that that I can also associate with. But let me tell you another reason why I became interested, Paul. Not only because you're a passionate man about this and you're a good friend, also because of my children, but then I had to look at myself. Look at myself. By looking at myself, I mean this. Less than a year ago, I was in the hospital complaining of severe chest pains. The doctors had put me on nitroglycerin tabs. I was on nitroglycerin tabs for the chest pain, which seemed to help some. They became more sporadic. They became, as if you didn't know, I also have hypolipidemia, stage 5. Which is, you know, high blood triglycerides in the blood. I was basically told I'd be a walking heart attack or a stroke victim, whichever one that they choose. to go further, I went from there and I had some tests done. I had an upper endoscopy. I had numerous x-rays, chest x-rays. I had gone in. I haven't had anybody go in from the other end, thank God. But the chest pains were so bad that I was even on what they call a longer acting nitroglycerin in coordination with the regular nitroglycerin.
Can I ask you my
other high blood pressure medicines and to lower my triglycerides. And to take it a step further, the chest pains were so bad that I had one of the main head cardiologists in the state of Maine, who I won't mention, but who does these procedures, cardiac catheterizations, 50 or more so times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was seemed of utmost importance that I have that done. I had the cardiac catheterization done. There was nothing found in there. I mean, there was, sure, I had, a few calcification things showing up in some three CAT scans that I had done. You can see the numbers adding up now, can't you, Paul?
Yes, sir. Not yet.
So I got put through the ringer. So I listened to you. I hear you entirely, and I hear the seriousness in your voice, and I just want to express to you how thankful I am that you came on the show with me to let others know how important it really is.
Well, here's one thing. We'll probably do this off the air, but we're gonna take care of the certain genetic test that might be some answers that you're looking for, and I want to know something. Before they threw you on all this medication,
mm-hmm.
Other than high triglycerides, did they do ultrasound on your heart? Did they look to see if you have any blockages? Did they do any of that?
They did EKGs. They did. They told me. Told you. They told me that I had. Here I was hooked up. I had chest pain. They were poking the nitros to me. I was in the emergency room. My wife was there, as was my mother and my brother that I hadn't seen in a while. And they came in, and they're poking the nitros to me. And all of a sudden, a head nurse comes in. A head doctor comes in, who I will not name, but came in and looked at me and said, "Have you ever taken anything for gas pain?" Well, that's all it took. My rage kicked in. I ripped out my IV, blood was squirting everywhere. I threw the IV across the room. It missed my wife's head by inches. And
hi, rage guy.
I was just utterly exhausted. And my mom, and as my wife could also attest, because they had taken me and been through so many appointments with me. Here I was speaking to a therapist, and the therapist was leading me down the road of, here, read this book, here, read that book, and here, do this, do that. And then, not knowing about Asperger's, she goes, "Well, I will tell anybody, I'll talk to anybody for you." And she goes, "But I think you're your best advocate." And I said, "I think you're right." And I did my own calls. I did my own research, but here I was paying a doctor in the process. And then the cardiologist that was working, that was supposedly working on my care, as of last month, until I just told him that my primary care can take her from here, thank you very much, was about 4 months, six, seven months now that I was under a cardiologist care, and the whole time I was not seeing him, but I was paying him an unreal amount of money. So
just
I'm
lay
sorry,
out. here's something I should stress to you, because as funny as you said how our lives are interacting right now,
mm-hmm.
I had the same issue. And now I'm not, I'm not the first one to defend the doctor, right?
Right.
You know this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that I had severe chest pain, and it is tied to gastro and anxiety, and acid reflux can be mistaken for as severe of a pain as a heart attack.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I would never defend a doctor, my friend, and you know this directly. I'm telling you from my heart.
Right.
That
mm-hmm.
I've been down this road, and all these, An EKG does nothing. It tells you what your heart is doing at rest mode. They can't see if you have arrhythmias. They can't see. There is a tool. It is a used tool, and it is a good tool. But you know, it's sometimes it's not a proper tool.
Exactly.
So your doctor may have been on the money, because if you suffer from anxiety and you build up enough stress, it can feel like a heart attack. Literally, I have lived it. And
well, you really want me to spill my gut. Here I go, okay? Because I'm one for going to my doctor and making sure that I'm okay, okay? Here's the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is that I was paying into an insurance company. At the time, I was fully paid, fully insured, and the doctors knew this. And by the time you know where I'm going with this. By the time my insurance, that when I was unable to go into the job, to keep the job that I was at because of the stress, the anxiety, the chest pain, and because, and so I took a leave of absence, you know, for medical, and because of that, I had to pay into my insurance company. As soon as they found out that and that I wasn't going to pay, guess what happened?
Dropped.
Exactly.
I lost my career. Hey, listen, there comes a point in life when you got to say, hey, is the rat race worth it, or is living to be a parent to my children worth
it? There you go.
And I think it took that kind of wisdom and that kind of life experience for you to start searching. And thank God a lot of people don't even put validity in what I say. And I really appreciate you and giving me the chance to, you know, show just a touch of what I know. Because, like you, I thought in pictures, you know. I'm about survival. I love life. Life is a beautiful, there's a lot of bad things out there, but, you know, if you take a suicidal child and threaten to take away his life, you'll find that he'll fight for his life.
Mm.
And I'm not calling either one of us a child, but when it comes to a point when you're looking at death in the face, you're willing to grasp at the straws, and you're not grasping at straws, you're grasping at the right direction.
Right. Well, Leo, Charlie, any concluding remarks here? I know you've been on there, and if you're still on there.
Yeah, I just want, because we've got to go, but I just wanted to say it's really refreshing for someone like Paul to come out and explain these things to people, but it all boils down to common sense, and doctors are there. They're great for tests, and they're great for emergency. But no, they're not trained for the whole body. We've experienced this with our son, and not because of autism, but because of other issues. And, you know, it's back to common sense and taking responsibility for yourself and being aware of systems and how the medical, the judicial, the legal, the educational systems work onto their own system. And human beings have to start taking responsibility for their own life. And you can't, you know, the systems are so large, they're hard to break down. So the ultimate, you know, responsibility is to be responsible about navigating those systems for yourself. And Charlie has something to say.
And I agree. I think it's important that he's not a doctor, actually, which illustrates that people can read, can understand the situations that they face, and can look for their own solutions. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to apologize for. And I think people should really take it as a good thing, as opposed to always depending on someone with yet a different kind of label, the professional label. They, as Leonora says, they play a role, but you can't depend on them to know it all. They're just human beings like anyone else, and their level of understanding is often determined by the people coming into their office to educate them, who in turn are simply salespeople for other companies.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on.
So I would say thanks, Scott and Paul, for having the show. It's really great. I hope, Scott, you'll have Paul on again. More people come on for discussion would be excellent, because we're just going to go now and have the rest of the day with our son. So you guys enjoy the rest of Sunday, and we'll speak to you again later this week.
Thank you, Joe and Charlie. Thank you so much for calling.
Big hug out to you guys, and give Anthony a hug for me, too.
Yeah, he's been listening. He heard that. Thanks, guys.
Excellent.
Bye.
Good night. Bye, Anthony.
I love those people.
Such an encouraging couple. Paul, any links that you want to share before we go off the air here and close?
I won't give you. I'll give you the quick. Just that www.interolab.com is one I really think that is important. But
okay.
If something is wrong in your family genetic history, if there is a history of any of these things, autism, epilepsy, diabetes, I mean, arthritis, asthma, kids even with allergies are due to an amino weakness.
Mm-hmm.
I really urge you to just do what I did. Don't listen to Joe Internet. Go on the Internet, put in the dysfunction, whatever it may be, and this is linked to many cancers, too, so if you just don't know how broad, but whatever it is, put a medical university of your choice. I don't care what it is, okay? Put the dysfunction and put the word gluten intolerance. The genetic test came back out, and it shows that the species is genetic, has predispositions for all these things to go wrong. It's not when, or it's not who, it's when it's going to happen. And stress is going to come out. So search your family history. Find out what's prevent it in your children. Prevent them from having to go down the hard road that us old timers have experience. And what we're learning in this generation is something different than the old timers in the last generation. Use it. Use knowledge. Knowledge is power. You know, just do Google search. Get the biggest library in the world. There's my link. Google.
Exactly. Well, thanks again, Paul, and I look forward to having you on the show again. Okay.
Can I hang on, or are we able to talk afterwards for a minute, or call you back, or what?
Well, actually, I can. I got to end the show. And then, because I have a nasty habit like you do, too, why don't we reconvene and call back in about 10 minutes? That sounds good?
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, bud. Same number?
Number? Just my phone number.
Okay. I'll talk to you then. Scott, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Good night to everybody on Blog Talk Radio. I hope you have a good evening. God bless.
God bless.